Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need.
Hey, hey.
Well, I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need.
Hey, hey.
Said I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. And if I share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me?
1211, this is WGN, and you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. How are you? This is John Williams. What a lovely day outside, huh? So let's wrap up the week with some business news. We'll be here all the way until 1 o'clock on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Anna DeVlantis is in the house, and she'll entertain and inform you starting at 1 o'clock. I was just reading something that somebody sent me. It said the S&P 500 rose 0.32%. But within the index, only 30% of the stocks advanced. Since 1996, there have been only two other sessions like today, February 23rd, 2000 and July 9th, 2001. One of those sessions led up to the dot-com bubble's all-time high, point being the rally that we've been seeing on the market has been narrow. We've talked a little bit about this, Brian Battle. Thanks for joining us, but I haven't seen anybody sort of dive that deeply or finely into it. What an interesting statistic.
Yeah, John, it is an interesting statistic, and we're in a weird time, too, but the fact is that the rally has been very narrow. And the narrowness has been focused on high tech. So the high tech companies, everyone figures that Facebook will make money no matter if people are home working or in the office. Same with other, you know, Apple. Same with the other high tech companies. So it's narrow, and so it's okay for the rally to be narrow. We just have to recognize what it is. But the narrowest can lead to fragility. So if you only have 30 stocks carrying an entire market, if anything happens in one of those 30s, you're on perilous ground and you could be exposed.
Brian Battle is a director principal with Performance Trust. Is that the best way to describe you?
That's right. That's right, John. Right. Chicago-based Performance Trust Capital Partners.
And so what do you guys do over there?
So, John, we're really analysts. We analyze bonds and we analyze markets and we're decision makers based on analytics and the principles of math. So we spend 0% of our time trying to figure out if interest rates are going up and down. We spend all of our time trying to figure out what if this scenario happens, how is that going to feel? If this scenario happens, how is that going to feel? So we spend a lot of time thinking about possibilities and possible scenarios and outcomes rather than trying to predict.
What do you think about the fragility of this market then? Because I don't like the sound of that.
It can be a problem. So what also makes this market very difficult and the economy very difficult is that we have an unprecedented amount of fiscal stimulus from Congress. You know, they poured $2 trillion into the economy with the CARES Act, which is two times the size on a dollar-adjusted basis, two times bigger than the bailout of 2009, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. So it's a giant amount of stimulus from Congress. Also, there's a lot of fiscal stimulus from the Federal Reserve. So those sort of just pumping in of enormous amounts of money into the economy distorts market signals. So right now, we have a 10-year Treasury note, and so if this is the safest bond in the world, the 10-year Treasury note yields 0.63, almost a half a percent. And that is good news if you're trying to take out a mortgage, because that's why you can refinance at such low rates these days, so it's a great time to take out a mortgage.
Yeah.
But that's really not a market rate. That is a rate that has been managed down by the Federal Reserve for policy reasons, not for economic reasons.
So the economy's not great, and much of the equities aren't great, but enough of them are that at least index funds and these giant groups like the Dow and the S&P 500, NASDAQ, they seem to be doing okay. So maybe I can be okay with that. You know, I'm thinking about maybe savings, retirement funds, if those handful of stocks continue to perform. And I would bet on them right now. They're all in the tech sector. That ain't going away. That's going to get better, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's a valid investment thesis to say, look, that technology is going to be around no matter what happens. So that's reasonable. It's not an unreasonable thing to say. What is difficult to, and there's going to be, what we've seen a lot in the media is, man, the stock market is totally divorced from the economy. How can the stock market be doing great when the economy stinks? And so what the stock market is sort of indicating is the stock market doesn't reflect the economy today. The stock market reflects the economy in the future. So the stock market and investors are saying, I don't care that the economy's closed down and the economic statistics are terrible. This is temporary, and in the future, it's all going to be okay again. So that's the bet, and that's what the market is signaling, of course, with all the stimulus that's in the economy also. So that's not in contrast, or it's not in conflict to say the economy's bad today and the stock market is predicting great things in the future.
We need to spend more time with you, but we're out of it today. If folks want to reach you, Brian, how do they do that?
Yeah, performancetrust.com. You can find us here. We're, like I said, we're based in Chicago, and we're glad to be on the show. We're big fans of Wintrust, and we love WGN.
And we sure appreciate your insight. That's fascinating. Thanks for joining us. A little terrifying, but if at least you know, that helps, right? It's 12:16 on WGN Radio. Back into the newsroom, and is that going to be you, Ryan Burrow? What's going on over
there?
It
is, yeah. Sunny skies for the rest of the day today. High of 88 along the lakefront. Probably mid-80s is going to be where we top off tonight. Clear skies, low of 65. Saturday, sunny with a high near 90 degrees. Right now on the Dow, things are up 124 points. S&P 500 is up 4, and the NASDAQ's up 25.
Still have this car fire northbound at 355 at 290 to watch for, and a stalled freight in Antioch and the Lake Villa area. It's causing backups on North Avenue closed between 83 and Lakewood, and also between Grass Lake and 83. Accident in Glen Ellen, 53 closed off at Roosevelt, and CTA Red Line now stopped near Jackson with some police activity. Mary Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
Orfi Devungi joins us again, chief economist at the Illinois Policy Institute in Chicago. Orfi, welcome back to the show. Thanks for giving us some of your time.
Oh, thanks for having me, John. It's always my pleasure.
You know, we do this Mincing Rascals podcast with one of your colleagues, Austin Berg, over there, and he's always a pleasure to talk to, too. So
that's right. Austin is the smartest guy on staff.
I don't know that that's true, but I know he's the smartest guy in our podcast. He's a very bright, passionate young man about issues that a lot of us don't care to think about. So he's a welcome addition to that, as you are to this broadcast. You are looking at the composition of the workforce, who's working, who's not working, and you kind of broke that down a little bit. What have you discovered, Orfi?
Oh, that's right. You know, women were disproportionately affected by COVID-19 when compared to similar men, so they lost more jobs. And since then, you know, nearly 100,000 women dropped out of the labor force, you know, in the last quarter from March to June. And that's a combination of fewer job opportunities, but also the absence of in-person schooling, limited childcare options are really forcing women out of the labor force.
Women end up taking on more of those roles and responsibilities than men, huh?
That's right. You know, women are our most talented, most skilled, and most productive workers. You know, if you're in the state of Illinois, you got 51% of prime working age women have a college degree compared to only 43% of men. And that's partly why in previous recessions, men were first to lose their jobs. So women tend to stay active even in recessions. But unfortunately, they still spend roughly 46% more time taking care of children when they have children in the household. And so when you have fewer job opportunities available, and on top of that, you have the kids at home, you tend to see more women leave the labor force.
So is that a problem with a solution? I mean, are you suggesting that more men be on the sidelines and the women take those jobs because they are more academically qualified? I mean, what do we do about that?
No. We need a growing labor force, right? If we want to see the economy recover, we need our work. We need more jobs. We need to bring people back from the sidelines, right? So we need more workers, and we need more productive workers. But unfortunately, policy at the state level, especially right here in Illinois, could actually exacerbate the damage, and it could push more people out instead of in. And that's because, you know, our governor is currently spending over $50 million of his own personal fortune to promote a progressive income tax that would actually hit over 100,000 small businesses with higher rates. You know, and those businesses, those small businesses, are the largest job creators in the state. In fact, S-Corps, right, some of these smaller enterprises are going to face five times the tax increase that larger corporations, that C-Corps, would face under Pritzker's progressive income tax. And we know, you know, if I was listening to your podcast, to your previous guest, and you know, that some of these larger corporations have actually been profitable, while the smaller businesses are on the brink of failure.
Is that called pass-through, where you talk about the income that a business earns and it actually being reflected on the taxes of an individual?
That's right. Some of these pass-throughs will pay the ordinary income tax, but then you have a couple of business taxes that are added on top of that under the new progressive income tax proposal that is out there. And so we really worry about that, right? So we don't want to government shouldn't be promoting policies that penalize that penalize job creators, because of course, you know, if you have less job creation and on top of that limited child care options, you're raising the cost of child care, and you're keeping women especially out of the labor force.
But I ask that to ask this, because I see that that's a problem that needs to be addressed. But I know a lot of people just think that in terms of ordinary income, people who make a lot of money in this state aren't paying their fair share. They call it a fair tax sometimes. I don't entirely agree with that language, I don't like the word fair, but I understand the sort of frustration people have when they think that the highest wage earners are not paying their fair share.
Yeah, and that's a myth. You know, that's a complete myth. The largest the people who pay the largest burden of taxation in Illinois, even under a flat tax, are those who bring in the most revenue, and some of those people are small business owners. We pay taxes like you and I, and of course they're paying taxes, but those people are employers. And you know, there's a ton of research that actually shows that, you know, those tax increases could act as a barrier to entry, for many businesses, for some of the smaller businesses, thus, in fact, helping, the bigger, larger corporations, because essentially what you're doing is you're limiting their competition, right? So, you know, if you have large corporations that can kind of afford some of these tax increases, the smaller guys that are essentially the largest job creators are kept out of the market, and so you create these markets that are not as competitive as they should be, and that actually exacerbates the income inequality that J.B. Pritzker wants to fix.
Do you not like a graduated federal income tax then?
You know, it's about tax competition, right? So we have a state of Illinois where, you know, every state faces the same federal income tax. But then in Illinois, you know, you have to compete with neighbor states. You have to compete with Wisconsin, Iowa, Indiana. And what you don't want is a high burden of taxation, a lower service provision in Illinois, because ultimately you're going to have a lot of these, people moving. Illinoisans moving to other states, and we've seen that in the last decade. We've lost more people to other states than the number of people who came in. We've had this huge out migration. It's not just the out migration of people; it's their wallet. They take their wallets with them. They take their income. They take jobs with them, and so we lose out to a number of neighbor states that are essentially implementing much better policies.
Handicap this last question for you, then handicap this new tax plan of the governor's. How do you think that's going to go, Orfi?
You know, a robust economic recovery is going to depend crucially on tax breaks, for small business owners, for individuals. Ultimately, we really want people to come back into the labor force, right? So if you don't have a robust labor force growth, you're not going to have a robust recovery.
But giving a break to those people, is that going to ensure that they hire people back, or is it possible that they won't?
Well, the first thing is, of course, we've got to get rid of this COVID threat, right? The COVID threat is still looming over us. And again, government completely failed us at all levels. in terms of the COVID threat. We got to get rid of the COVID threat. We have to be able to reopen our schools safely and get these child care options back on the table so we can attract our most productive workers back into the labor force. And we're not going to do that by penalizing job creators.
Orfi Duvangi is the chief economist over at the Illinois Policy Institute. You hear him frequently here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Nice to hear you today, Orfi. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John.
It's 12:28. News coming up. 12:30. This is WGN.
It's 83 sunny degrees at 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Burrow. The news sponsored by Builder Supply Outlet. New COVID-19 numbers are in Illinois. WGN traffic, Mary Vandeveld.
Traffic sponsored by Northwest Community Healthcare. We do have some CTA red line delays because of earlier police activity at Jackson. Otherwise, Edens looks good. Kennedy starting to build inbound from North Avenue. Some outbound Eisenhower delays approaching Mannheim. Rusty expressways are fine. Slow on the Indiana Toll, though, eastbound from Columbia to Kennedy. Road work in the left lane. When your car makes noises, you take it to the shop. If your joints feel like they need a tune-up, the experts in Northwest Community Healthcare's Total Joint Replacement Program can silence your pain in no time. Learn more at nch.org/joint. Mary Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
The forecast from the Permaseal Weather Center. Sunny today, a high of 88 degrees tonight. Clear skies, a low of 65. Saturday, we're going to get up near 90. And along the lakefront, 84 degrees. The new numbers of COVID-19 cases in Illinois are in, up to 2,200. That's up about 200 from yesterday. But the state's positivity rate has dropped slightly from 4.4% to now 4.3%. There have been 24 additional deaths statewide over the last 24 hours. A proposal to have the National Guard brought into Chicago to help deal with the protests, widespread looting and gun violence has been kicked to City Council Committee. The decision coming during a virtual meeting today. Mayor Lori Lightfoot is expected to talk about that later this hour. Not a good day for Kanye West's 2020 campaign. He's been booted from the Illinois, Wisconsin, and Ohio ballots this November for lack of meeting requirements. Now WGN Sports. White Sox visiting the Cubs tonight at Wrigley Field. The pregame, 6:40. First pitch with Andy Mazur and Darren Jackson, 7:15 on 720 WGN. Your money on WGN. Right now, stocks are up. The Dow up 107 points. S&P 500 up 3. The NASDAQ is up 16. Right now, around the area, it's 80 degrees in Bartlett, 80 in Lansing, 79 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. I'm Ryan Burrow on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
12:34, Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Our next guest is Dr. William Yates from Yates Protect. Dr. Yates, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
I know a little bit about your business and the line of products that you sell. I just wanted to mention a little bit about your background. You are from the South Side. You got your degree from Northwestern University. You were part of the honors program there, and you practiced as a trauma surgeon for many years. You witnessed firsthand, I guess, some of the gun violence that we talk about all of the time in this city, right?
That's correct. I saw it every day, every night. You know, it's very disturbing.
Was that at Northwestern or Cook County? Where were you practicing then?
At that time, at the Washington University system in St. Louis. I was head of trauma at one of the hospitals in St. Louis. But it's all the same, no matter where you are.
Now you have this other business. Speaking of trauma, we're all trying to survive COVID-19. So tell me a little bit about the business that you're in.
Yeah, well, the business, just like you said, as a trauma surgeon, say 3 to 4 years ago, I started a business to help deter and prevent gun violence, providing metal detectors, x-ray equipment, and handheld devices to prevent guns from getting into public places. So this kind of parlayed to, with COVID, we worked on a non-contact thermal scanner that we could put on the metal detectors to actually do two for one, prevent guns from coming in public places, but also screen for things like COVID for people with elevated temperatures or fever. So that's basically what we do.
That's a thermal detector, a non-contact thermal detector.
Yes.
So in other words, it's going to shoot a laser beam at me or something, and it's going to recognize what my body temperature is.
You kind of hit it on the head. Everybody emits infrared radiation. So depending on if it's a camera, we have a camera that senses how much infrared radiation your body emits. It's just like night goggles that the military uses. So that's correct.
I think a lot of us are familiar with that scene. You'll see this glowing image, and it's red or orange, and maybe that reflects that there's a thermal pulse there. There's a human being there. But are you telling me that that technology can, to within a degree or so, measure my temperature from a distance?
Yes. We can measure your temperature, depending on the unit that you would select, up to as low as like a couple feet up to about 6 to 7 feet away. And we can see up to a group of 50 people, say, marching in the door. If you point the camera at those 50 people, we can tell the temperature of each one of them as they file through. Yes.
Are businesses installing this technology now?
Yes, they are. Like places like City Hall here in Chicago, and we have plenty of other municipalities in the state and other states, lots of schools, a lot of food plants and courthouses, kind of the mainstay right now.
What's the advantage and disadvantage of that? For instance, I can imagine a scenario where maybe I show a temperature, but I don't have COVID, or I do have COVID and I don't demonstrate a temperature.
Right. Well, that's always going to be the debate. The literature says, you know, people who are asymptomatic and have COVID and don't have a fever could be up to 50% of the population. There's some studies that say that. And it can, people really don't know what the real number is. But in actuality, even if the number's 50%, if you catch the other 50% that do have a fever, I think it's worthwhile to screen for that. I think everything you know about this disease, you should put all hands on deck. So I would say the downside, if there's any, to this technology is everybody that has a fever doesn't have COVID. But one thing for sure, if your temperature is over 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit, that I don't think you should be allowed to go to school, go to work, or be any place public. You need to be referred to your doctor for further investigation.
Because I might have COVID, maybe because I have the flu. Are you arguing that either way, regardless of COVID, that should be a flag to keep me from going forward?
That's correct. That's what I think is going to happen in the future, because we're realizing the effects of infectious disease. So people, you know, in the past, everyone will go to work unless you're in a coma because you were, you were weak if you couldn't go to work. But now we're finding, well, that's maybe not the best thing. If you have a fever, you can't will your body to have a fever. It's a highly sophisticated mechanism of you fighting something. So if you have a fever, you shouldn't be working anyway. So that's just what I'm saying, yes.
We should have been doing this all along then, right? I mean, is it correct that incidence of the flu is down because we're all wearing masks and trying to isolate ourselves?
True. And the flu, I mean, the flu is coming up, so everybody should get a flu vaccine to kind of keep everything separate, because the symptoms are kind of the same except for the fever. With COVID, we know for a fact people who are symptomatic, most of them start with a fever instead of a runny nose or a cough. That's why I think it's significant, you know, to check temperatures. And Asia has been doing this for years, you know, so this isn't something that I just made up. That on the airport in, you know, Asia, they have these cameras. They've been doing it since the first SARS epidemic, I think 2002, 2003.
Mm. I guess we have to get used to that, right? So if they say, hey, you've got a temperature, you can't get on that plane or go in that building or go to that classroom, we're going to also have to accept the science as, you know, recipients of this technology.
I would say so. I mean, again, I mean, if you have a fever, your body's letting you know something's not right. So, I mean, it's too much to lose to just let people slip through like that. So I would say yes.
Here's what I want you to develop, Dr. Yates. So you might want to write this down. I want the equivalent of a Geiger counter for COVID-19.
Okay.
I mean, there is this virus. It's a tiny little thing, and we don't see radioactive particles in the air. Wouldn't it be swell if you could come up with something and it would click every time one of the viruses hit some sort of target?
Yes, it would. I mean, viruses are much smaller than electromagnetic waves. That's the problem. So that would be a great adjunct to have.
I didn't say it was going to be easy, Doctor. I didn't say this was going to be something you're going to do overnight, but maybe over the weekend.
Yes, maybe this weekend. I'll call you back on Monday and tell you how far I got.
If I shy of that, then, if I wanted to purchase some of your other technology or find out more, how do people find out about Yates Protect?
Usually by visiting the website, yatesprotect.com. We have a pretty detailed website describing our equipment and how it works and the things we've discussed today, why I think it's a good idea to do this.
One last thing. Are there other biomarkers that you can detect? Is it just thermal imaging, or is there something else that we throw off that one of your gadgets would know?
No, unless you have a gun Other than that, no.
Right, metal detectors. Yeah, sure, sure. Well, then work on that Geiger counter thing, and we'll put you back on when that comes through, okay?
Good deal. I will. Thank you so much.
That's Dr. William Yates, Yates Protect. Visit yatesprotect.com. And by the way, if you do that, then I want some credit for it. In the meantime, it's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch Business Minute, and I'm not sure who's doing that today. We will introduce Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Deere & Company's latest quarterly earnings have beat Wall Street expectations. The company had profit of $2.57 per share. Deere says its construction and forestry sales were down 28%, agriculture and turf sales down 5%. Governor Pritzker is providing a look at how he wants to make the state a completely renewable energy state by 2050 with tighter controls on utility companies amid that influence peddling scheme involving ComEd. The plan also includes goals of providing a remedy for potentially disastrous climate change and pollution while creating sustainable jobs and a new age of 750,000 electric vehicles within the next decade. And a federal judge in San Francisco has given initial approval to details of a class action settlement that says Facebook violated Illinois privacy law with its facial tagging feature. Illinois Facebook users could be eligible for up to $300 as part of a whopping $650 million settlement. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you for that, Steve. Mary Vandeveld's looking at traffic for you.
CTA experiencing some red line delays due to earlier police activity. Otherwise, the Eden's in great shape. Outbound Kennedy just slow into Nagel inbound. Some delays from North Avenue. Eisenhower inbound from 390s up to about 40 minutes. Some delays between Mannheim and Harlem. Outbound 34 to 390. Stevenson looking good along with the Dan Ryan. Slow on the Indiana Toll eastbound into Kennedy Avenue. Road work in the left lane. And in Carroll Stream, watch for an accident north and Gary. Mary Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
Back into the newsroom. Is that you, Ryan Burrow?
It is. And right now, stocks are looking pretty good. The Dow up 140 points. S&P 500 is up 5. NASDAQ up 25.
Thank you for that. And now WGN Radio Agribusiness. This is Orion Samuelson.
And the agricultural markets today. The grain market mixed. September wheat is up 5 cents a bushel at 524.5. September corn is up a penny and three quarters a bushel at 326.25, but the September soybean contract trading lower, down 2 cents a bushel, and that puts it a penny above $9 a bushel. The livestock futures Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the October lean hog contract is down 90 cents a hundredweight. The August live cattle contract down $1.37, and the August feeder cattle contract is down 55 cents. We keep talking about the agricultural economy and the damper it puts on purchases. So this morning, Deere & Company, which is the world's largest farm equipment maker, lifted its full-year earnings forecast after a smaller-than-expected decline in quarterly profit. The Moline, Illinois-based company said it now expects net income of about $2.25 billion for the full year. That's higher than the $1.6 to $2 billion that they had estimated earlier. Quarterly profit came in at $2.57 a share. That's down 8.5% year on year. But Deere's shares, which have gained 36% since its last earnings report, opened higher and are trading higher today. Cost measures have reduced manufacturing and operating expenses, and Deere has launched employee separation programs that are forecast to result in an annual savings of $175 million. The story for outdoor activities, normally we'd have the Illinois State Fair today, not happening, as are most state fairs here in the Midwest. And, of course, we already know the Farm Progress Show will be a virtual event this year. Incidentally, tomorrow morning on our Saturday morning show, Max Armstrong will join me to talk about the Farm Progress Show and the Husker Harvest Day's virtual performance this year to give you all of the necessary information on how to connect and take a look at the new equipment virtually. Max will be emceeing that event on the virtual technology, and that will take place September 15 through 17. They're doing both shows, the Husker Harvest Days at Grand Island, Nebraska, and the Farm Progress Show at Boone, Iowa. Normally, they would be live performance shows on different dates, but they're putting those together virtually, and Max Armstrong will be here to talk about that on tomorrow Saturday morning show. And that's Ag Biz. I'm Orion Samuelson.
1250 on WGN. I think that's Andrea Darlis over on line 7. Hey, Andrea, it's John. Welcome to the show.
King John, how are you doing?
Wintrust Business Lunch rolls on with our former news reporter and anchor here at WGN Radio and host of many shows, for that matter, Andrea Darlis, who now has a fancy job over at the University of Illinois. What do they call you again now, AD?
I am called the Senior Director of Constituent Engagement at the U of I based in Chicago.
So you visit with or work with families who are U of I families from the Chicago area, huh?
Well, I work under the Chancellor and the Department of Public Affairs, and I deal, since I'm located in Chicago, yes, I do deal with a lot of people coming to me saying, oh my gosh, what's happening? What's going on? Tell me about the saliva testing. So, yeah, it's a thrill. It really is, John.
Well, I think it is very, I know you've loved your job and you've been a big U of I alum and supporter for so many years. And when you got this job, I thought you were the perfect person for it. But when you did, you had no idea that it would be this, right? I've been hearing so many families whose kids are going to the U of I and are talking about what that experience is like. And I will tell you, anecdotally anyway, Andrea, that a lot of the families are very appreciative of how careful the U of I, at least from an administrative standpoint, is trying to be. There's an app that you guys have, too. Is that right?
Yeah, it's awesome, John. I mean, I never realized that it was the hardest thing in the world to leave WGN, but to come to University of Illinois, my alma mater, my alum, it's an absolute thrill. And now with the saliva testing being approved by the FDA, the app, it's called Safer in Illinois, and it's basically an app. It tests and limits exposure to slowing the spread of COVID-19. So you can use the app to provide any COVID symptoms that you experience, automatically receive or enter test results from your healthcare provider, and it's a giant contact tracer is what it is. And that's how, based on the scientific model, John, we are hoping to keep this down. You know, the University of Illinois has its own small curve as well, which is very tiny. But the saliva test is 10,000 tests, John, is what the university conducted on Monday. And to give you an idea, that's 1.3% of the tests that were performed in the entire nation. So this is really following every student as they go to class, as they go out being socially distant. It models the physics of the spread using these mitigation steps. Because you had 45,000 students returning, they could be asymptomatic. So this is a way, the app is a way to kind of keep tabs on everybody, but following privacy guidelines too.
So you want all of the students to download the app onto their phone. And then how do I get it? But then I need to get a physical saliva test from somewhere, from somebody, right?
Right. So we are providing, so every student returning to campus is required to submit to testing, the saliva test, 2 times a week.
Oh, really?
And that information,
Pardon me, not a nasal swab, a saliva test twice a week?
Yep, it's a saliva test twice a week. It's more than 95% accurate. And it's very similar to us, but ours is actually better. Ours is 8 times more sensitive. It protects healthcare workers, and you get your results within 5 to 24 hours. It's usually on the quicker side.
And what is the interaction then with that in the app? So I could see the value of the saliva test, but what does that have to do with the app, Andrea?
So the app is directly, you will get your results on that app, John, within 5 to 24 hours, usually about 5 to 7 hours it takes. Huh. And you get your results right on that app. It'll tell you if you're positive or negative. And if there is a positive test, it will not allow you to enter college buildings. Your access will be denied to get into your classroom, and you will be required to then quarantine for 14 days, and there are dorms and rooms that set aside for that, more than 400 rooms for quarantining.
Yeah. If a student doesn't get their saliva test every other day, are there consequences for that? How do you monitor that, Andrea?
There are consequences. We're going to work on those on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, part of the deal, John, was in order to make this hybrid model work, so, you know, there was an overwhelming number of students who wanted to return to campus for that college experience. But in doing so, they have to agree to follow the guidelines and the restrictions, and that includes being tested twice a week. So they have to follow these guidelines. They have to follow the protocols. When you get to campus, you get your welcome packet. You spit in a little test tube. That's your saliva test. Then you get the keys to your dorm. And that's how we keep a close eye on everybody to keep these numbers down. The frequency of the testing allows for quick quarantining and contact tracing.
Well, that's so true, because I think we all know people who have gotten a COVID test and they get the results a week later, which is a pointless practice. If you could have,
exactly,
you could have picked it up since then. You could have given it to somebody since then.
Hey, John.
Yeah, go ahead.
Being an alum, I just wanted to ask Andrea a question. Hey, Andrea.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. What do you do about the kids who live in a house or an apartment? How do they get their tests?
They are all, every student, Mary, whether you live in a sorority house, a fraternity house, an apartment, you are required to test. You have to use your ID, you know, your University of Illinois issued ID. And you go, and there's two testing sites right now, but that's going to be expanded. We tested 20,000 students. This week, and then what we're expecting to do is, when classes start next week on the 24th, is perform up to 20,000 tests a day. And these sites are all spread throughout campus. They're in giant tents to provide for social distancing. So it's 40 testing lines on campus. It's actually 20 different locations right now. They started out with two, and now we're going up to 20 next week.
Got it. Wow. So it doesn't matter where you're living, as long as you're a student there. If you want to access a class, if you want to do the things you'll be required to do as a student, then you have to have the app, and you have to be demonstrably not with COVID as a result of this saliva test, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's the perfect summation of it. You're a student. You have an ID. It doesn't matter where you live. You have to undergo the testing twice a week.
And then I got 30 seconds, Andrea, but you mentioned contact tracing then. I guess then if I test positive, then would you look into who else I was in contact with?
Absolutely, yep. 300 contact tracers have been hired in Champaign-Urbana by the health department as well, so they're all part of this. You know, it just the speed at which this happened is remarkable, too. And that, I think, is the key to all of this, is getting those contact tracers, finding out who you've been in contact with, and immediately getting your results and isolating you for 14 days.
Our best to you and the students, the faculty and staff, and everybody in Chicago and, of course, in Champaign-Urbana. Andrea, good to hear your voice again.
You too. Miss you guys. See you soon.
That's our Andrea Darlis. The U of I's
Andrea
Darlis. Yeah, I know. Bye, Andrea. It's 12:57. This is WGN.